Hello, everyone. This is JDL back in the seat with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, we're going to all get together in meat space. Do you like that word, Sarah? I bet
meat space
is a word that like
does it have two E's or an E and an A?
E and an A.
Oh, meat space. Like where human flesh is? That's
gross.
Yes.
But we're doing it anyway. We're all getting together, not once, but twice. Twice to the head.
Maybe this month. We're thinking about Philly, a swing state tour. Yep.
Philly on May 1st.
Pennsylvania's a swing
the
state.
Great, my home city, the city of brotherly love, possibly a special appearance by Jason Kelsey. Who could say? And
I think I can say probably not.
Again on May 15 in D.C.
I haven't been to Philly in ages. I've spent so much time in Philly.
Really?
I haven't gone to GW. So one of my good freshman year friends, Jill Priestley, does JVL, because it's very similar to your situation right now. He's from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, South Jersey. Yeah. But freshman year, when you're all meeting, it's like, where are you from? He said he's from Philly. And so then we become friends. A couple months later, it's like Thanksgiving. Or it's a break weekend. He's like, why don't we go up to my house in Philly? And I was like, great. We get there and it's like, no, this is Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Like, you're not from Philly, you're from Jersey. And so we called him Jersey. And so the rest of the time, it backfired. His nickname was Jersey. So Jersey went to Philly a lot together. I used to have very strong feelings about my favorite cheesesteak places, but it's been so long, I'm like out of practice. I'm excited.
Did you guys go to South Street? I bet you hung out at
South Street a lot. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm the only one on this pod who's actually from Pennsylvania. My grandparents lived in Philly. I grew up going to Philadelphia.
Weren't you close to like rural?
Yeah, you were in like rural Amish country.
Yeah, I grew up way closer to Philadelphia.
But my grandparents lived in Philly. Oh my God, no.
I grew up 10 minutes from Center City.
I grew up going into Center City, Philadelphia to see my grandparents for every holiday. And I'm a real Eagles fan. I mean, I'm not a real Eagles fan, but I have real Eagles, what is it, genealogy?
I trick-or-treated at Randall Cunningham's house.
I don't know who that is.
Checkmate.
No. Hey, you know what? Fine. I got gay at Sisters, the lesbian bar in Philly, when I was working at the conservative think tank in Delaware, and I would drive up there. How about that?
I've got some Delaware cred, too. Okay, whatever. We're going to be in Philly. If you're near Philly, if you're in Wilmington, if you're in Cherry Hill, if you're out in Amish country in Gettysburg, where Sarah grew up, it's so close to Philly that you can just come on down. Come on down.
Yeah,
no,
it's super close from Harrisburg.
Not where I grew up. You guys.
Anyway, that's May 1st in Philly, and then May 15th
in
D.C.
It felt like Harrisburg. I don't know where it actually was, but it had the vibe of Harrisburg.
Actually, you have been to my house. Yeah.
Go to thebulwark.com/events. It's so easy to remember. It's just our website, thebulwark.com/events, because it's an event, right? So go there and you can get tickets. All right. Big news this week is out of Arizona, which is like desert Florida, right?
Arizona is great, actually. It's way better than Florida. Arizona
is
cool.
It really?
It's vibey. It's pretty. It's beautiful.
Eleanor Shellstrip disagrees. I don't know, man. I don't love me some Arizona. But so we got an interesting ruling from the Arizona State Supreme Court that a law passed in 1864, which forbid all abortion after conception, except for in the life of the mother, and turned it into a felony. 1864, roughly half a century before Arizona became a state, that law, which has existed and was not taken off the books, is still valid. So there's a little bit of confusion. I am curious what you guys think about the law. I'm curious what you think about the politics.
I like the dual part of it. You didn't mention that. So if you're...
Go ahead.
You're an option. As of 1864, if you're a doctor that performs an abortion, you can either do 5 years in prison or you can do a duel with the local sheriff from Prescott. You do 10 paces, it's a six shooter. It's an interesting provision. I think we should be bringing that back.
You'll notice that the date on this is quite a bit before women were given the option of voting. And so,
What year was Tombstone? Like, I'm picturing Tombstone in my head. I don't know
when it really is. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess let's start with the legal part of it. So we also have a 2022 law in Arizona, which is a 15-week ban on abortion with some exceptions. There is a 14-day window before enforcement would theoretically begin that has been left over by the state Supreme Court. But in practice, it's probably a 90-day window. And there is possibly some way to harmonize the 1864 law with the 2022 law.
That's not going to happen.
Although what that would be,
yeah, that, I don't know why they would harmonize it. They would just the legislature would pass the 2022 law.
And they're not going to.
And they're not going to. You know why? Because they've got their own little Freedom Caucus wing, and the Dems aren't going to want to do it because they're going to want to do this, put this ballot initiative in there for the election that literally puts abortion on the ballot in 2024. And so the chance for them, I mean, I think that there was a tweet from somebody who I think is an absolute psychopath on Twitter normally and is constantly tweeting psychopathic things, but tweeted one really funny tweet, which was the election, the 2024 election in Arizona was called for Joe Biden on April 9th at 3:24 p.m.
Fox News called it, I believe, was the joke. Fox News called the election for Joe Biden.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good sense of, I mean, the overwhelming conventional wisdom, which I happen to agree with, is that this puts Arizona, which was really going to be a struggle for Biden because of his slide with Hispanics, back in play in a way that now I think he's an odds-on favorite to win it.
Yeah. Just on the legal side real quick, and then I'll give my punditing thoughts too if you want. But I was calling through my Arizona people, and they're just boned on this.
Yeah.
There's no way out of it. I mean, the only way out right is the attorney general has said that they won't enforce the law, but then it's like, okay, is that going to happen in every county? Random sheriffs. Katie Hobbs could conceivably pledge to pardon anybody that gets convicted by the local jurisdiction. I think that's something that they're going to be considering. But there's not going to be a legislative fix. Sarah mentioned the Freedom Caucus in Arizona. Democrats aren't going to want their fingerprints on a 15-week ban or a compromise. And in Arizona, I don't know if you know this, the judges are on a 2-year cycle where they have to get affirmed by the voters. And so,
yeah, so they're appointed and then elected.
Yeah, appointed and then elected. So two of the four, there were seven judges in Arizona, all appointed by Republicans, five appointed by Ducey, four of the Ducey appointees.
Yeah, that seems totally normal in a state with a Democratic governor and two Democratic senators that, the entire Supreme Court is Republican appointed. Cool.
Well, it's been Republican governors up until recently, so you can thank Carrie Lake for that. So it sounds like Katie Hobbs will get the chance to appoint two because there'll be two up this year. Those guys seem to be boned. One of them is Clint Bolick, actually, somebody that I know a little bit, who is kind of a normal, old school, normie, traditional Republican. His wife, I don't mean this as a pejorative about her personally because I don't know her, but her political persona is lunacy. She was an election denier and is in the state legislature. And so he's going to be in a bad way having to own all of her political statements and having supported this. And then, I think the legislature is pretty close in Arizona also to flipping. So, I mean, I think that it could be a nightmare. I talked to one of the Gallegos, I guess, informal advisors, friends yesterday, and he's just like, he thinks that the Republicans might end up abandoning Carrie Lake over all this, that like they're just going to be other better states on the map. So we'll see.
I mean, a couple of questions. We'll talk about the Carrie Lake part of this in a second. I want to talk about the state attorney general. State attorney general is Chris Mayes, who said that won't be any prosecution.
I don't love that.
I'm not sure I didn't love that. I don't like that at all because like the law is the law.
Right.
And I don't love the idea of people picking and choosing like which laws they'll enforce and which laws they won't, because I mean, frankly, because it insulates the population from the consequences of their voting behavior.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you say, yeah, I'm sorry, we're just, you know, we won't, don't worry, we won't enforce the law, then why would there be an incentive for people to act differently? Is that too hard-hearted? Because there are real people here, right? There are real people who would be affected by this. And
I'm sorry, like laws have to matter. The black and white letter of the law, if you just ignore it, we do not have a system of law and order then. And obviously I'm here to talk about when Republicans do that, but Democrats can't do it either. It's just, I hate it when people do this. So here's the main question I have. Are the Democrats, this ballot initiative that they are going to put forward, is it too extreme? I think there's a way you can get overconfident with the ballot initiative language. I saw something somewhat in passing that said that it was going to be like abortion up until the last minute and no restrictions whatsoever. And I think that they should be careful about overplaying their hand here. I think that they should, you know, have a ballot that basically just reinstates Roe. That's my question for you guys.
I don't know. I mean, I worry that the consultant class answer to this is, well, you want to push for whatever gets you to 51%, right? You want to, you know, have it be as liberal as possible so long as you get to 51%. Whereas like the Sarah JVL and probably Tim version of this is like, you want something on the ballot that's going to get you 65%.
Yeah.
Like you want something that gets a huge, absolute gigantic majority that makes you look like, not makes you look like, that shows that you are a governing party looking to create broad consensus and not just trying to get away with the thing which is most barely acceptable.
Yeah. Yes? And the thing that I want to happen is it's not going to happen, right? Like in a healthy democracy, in an imaginary world, this 1864 law would pass and Katie Hobbs now has leverage and she goes to the legislature and she's like, okay, I didn't like the 15. What can we do? You know, can we do 24 weeks and combine it with some funding for, you know, mother, you know, pregnancy centers and for mothers that are dealing with complex pregnancies or paid time off. I don't know what other Democratic priorities they would have that are associated. Right. And say, let's start wheeling and dealing. Like, that's not happening, right? And, you know, in part because they don't have a partner to work with because the Republicans in Arizona are insane, but also in part because the Democrats don't seem to be that interested, at least in this issue, of trying to find broad consensus and dealing. So that's just not what's going to happen. And so, you know, we're staring down the barrel of putting this thing on the ballot. And I do think that initially the idea was that it would just reinstate Roe. I don't know how it ends up, but it would be nice to have something that could get to big, huge consensus. I mean, I mentioned this. I did a video on this for YouTube. Folks want to go to the Bulwark YouTube page about the Biden ad on this, which I liked. And I felt like I was going to say this because I was going to be the only person to say this because Democrats weren't going to say this. But if you notice the Biden ad that they put out on abortion after Trump's statement, it featured a woman that wanted to have a baby.
Yes.
That was having a miscarriage, that was unable to get the procedure that she needed for her own health. It put her own health at risk. She survived. The baby obviously didn't survive because she had a miscarriage. And as a result now, it's going to be very challenging, if not impossible, for her to have another baby, which she wants, right? And so to me, I thought that ad was very smart because it appeals to the people that are pro-choice across the board. And it also appeals to people that are in the Liz Cheney, right? Like these get, you know, people that are like, that still have pro-life views that are still uncomfortable with abortion at some level, which by the way, might be Joe Biden because he never says the word abortion, which appeals to people that have pro-life views, but that are upset with Republican extremism.
Yeah.
Because if you include those people into the coalition where it's pro-choice people, plus people that are generally temperamentally pro-life, but aren't happy about the bounty laws, like that gets you to maybe more than 65%.
Probably 70, 75, actually, if you go
right
to the polling.
And so that's a good place to be for Democrats. And I'm glad that Biden did that in the ad.
Yeah, but it also, here's the thing. You have to win the conversation on the other side being too extreme. And that's why I just think they should be careful about getting to a consensus ballot initiative that doesn't feel too extreme. Because if you give Republicans the opportunity for offense, this bill allows abortion, you know, that's what Donald Trump always say, after the baby's born, which, you know, is insane and not true. But maybe some of them will say that anyway. But I think that having something that is very defensible to a broad swath of people is important here so that nobody shanks this opportunity because it is, I can't tell you how much, and this is on the politics again, how much I have been the skunk at the picnic in a lot of rooms with Democrats who think that Roe is absolutely going to save them all over the board here, and that it's a cataclysmic earthquake politically. And I think that they took the wrong lessons from 2022, which is that, look, you are going to win in a lot of places where there are ballot initiatives and you get these high-info voters, high-propensity voters who turn out for these initiatives. Like a big general election with a lot of issues, just a different animal. And like in 2022, abortion mattered a lot, but it didn't like knock out Republicans. It didn't like knock out the Republican in Ohio. It didn't knock out the Republican, you know, it did tip the balance in very narrow places where the candidate was extreme on abortion and also election denialism and also just in general, right? Like you got your Blake Masters, oh, the Unabomber, he's fine. You got your Herschel Walker, so, oh no, look at all these women saying he paid for my abortion. You got your Tudor Dixon, like abortion mattered there where she was like, if a girl at 12 is raped, she has to carry it to term, like she gets crushed by 10 points. But it is not a silver bullet in the way that some Democrats think. And I do think it literally being on the ballot is different from sort of the abortions on the ballot, broadly speaking. Right. And this is a, you know, Arizona I've been just worried about because of the slide with Hispanic voters, even though it has been trending bluer all the time. Like, you're right, used to have all these Republican governors, and it now has for the first time a Democratic governor plus two Democratic senators, which are almost a direct product both of the demographic change in the state and all the people moving in, young families, how much Maricopa County has been shifting. And so this just like, this is an earthquake specifically in Arizona, and it changes the opportunity on the map. I've been sort of saying, look, you got to really focus on these blue wall states where you got a lot more white voters, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Nebraska too, which is another whole other issue that I think we discussed a couple weeks ago. But you need that. That's your state. And now I think I would just as a, let's say a practitioner, I would go from worrying about how many resources I put in Arizona to like, everybody should be all in on Arizona. This is a place to win. Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Biden's big opportunity, I mean, this again helps him with the core people that was already helping him with, right? Which is the college educated Maricopa County, Flake, McCain voter. His issue now is going to be consolidating and figuring out, this is like where it's a little bit outside of my expertise about what the right issue set is, what the right message is. But if you look at the numbers at that, going back to the Hispanic vote, Gallego is running out ahead of him.
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, there's some Gallego Trump voters among Hispanic men and figuring out how to crack that. But you know, I think that Gallego's in really good shape now. And this looks like one of the better Biden states of the six, if not maybe the second best.
So you guys said the NRSC might pull the plug on Carrie Lake. What is she
going to
do
on that.
This?
I said that.
Tim said that? Yeah. I'm sorry.
Is that true?
Yeah. I'm not saying that I think they might pull the plug. I guess I was saying I was speaking to somebody that was at a briefing from the NRSC where they list their top five states. And then they listed their stretch states, and they mentioned Larry Hogan, and like they didn't mention Arizona. Maybe it was an oversight by the person doing the briefing. And this is just one thing, right? Like, and then they're like, all right, Arizona. But I think that the numbers are bad. The Lake is just, she's a disastrous candidate, right? And this whole like pivot back to get like, why would it be better this time than it was last time? It's not like in a lot of ways she is even worse than Trump, right? Like Trump, you know, can do the whole, oh, I'm really a you know, guy that was on reality TV and remember how the great things were in 2019. Like she doesn't have any of that. Like she has all of Trump's baggage, but very little of his pluses. And so if you just kind of look at the map of Montana and Ohio and other places, you know, I do think that it's possible. And I'm not saying it's definite, but it's possible if you look here at April 10th that Arizona ends up looking like not that competitive of a Senate race.
What is she going to do on abortion?
Well, she came out yesterday and said she's for it, but she is so boned on this. So there's an audio. I played it on
she's
the Daily
She's for Pod what? Today. She's for...
She now says, let's go back to the 15-week.
Oh,
but right. There's, okay. From her debate from the Republican gubernatorial primary, she was asked a question about this, and the audio is so clear. Like I said, I played on the Daily Pod. That literally, she's like, she starts by saying, I think that they're going to uphold the 1864 territorial ban. Like she was punditing. And then the interviewer follows up and says, okay, but are you for that? And she says, yes. And then they follows up and says, like, what does that mean for like birth control, the pill? And she's like, I'm against that. But I mean, and it's not like the Donald Trump mealy mouthed. Like he does that video and it's kind of like hard to get a 30-second ad cut out of it because his sentences are like a stream rolling, you know, babbling down a mountain, and he does weird asides and stuff. He doesn't ever do subject, verb, predicate. She's just like, yes, yes, ban, 1864 ban, yes, awesome. Ban the pill. So she backtracked on that yesterday. But I mean, that ad.
Good luck.
Yeah, that ad's already going to be on TV. And Ruben also has more money than her, by the way. And she has the Trump money problem too, because in addition to our other issues.
All right, one last thing on this. Trump has decided that this all has to go back to the states, and Pro-Life Inc. is super cool with that. They don't care about national bans anymore after saying it was the most important thing ever.
I want to hear what you think about Pro-Life Inc., JVL, but can we just take one moment to just wallow? I mean, Donald Trump gets so lucky sometimes. Like things just break Donald Trump's way sometimes. We all have to be like, are you fucking kidding me? He got, you know, Fonnie Willis's like boyfriend. And what bad luck. He didn't have to put out this video on Monday. He decides that he wants to put out a video that's like, I've come up with my solution to abortion. Let's put it back to the states. And then 24 hours later, Arizona's like, okay, bro, 0 week ban, no exceptions, life of the mother.
I just want to just throw in a little bit of focus group stuff on the abortion issue, because we just did a group this week of two-time Trump voters who don't want to vote for him again. And we asked about abortion. And as there usually is among Trump voters, there was like, they were like basically pro-choice as a group. And here's what one of them said. I get that they just eliminated the federal thing and that they left it up to the states. That's been so many people's argument. But you're getting to the point where you're putting women's lives at risk. And there are so many stories, like the girl out of Texas, like there's so many stories that you can see why this pro-life is such a terrible idea. And one of the things
that Trump voter.
Two-time Trump voter. That's right.
Good.
But who is leaning away from Trump. And here's the thing. These voters, there were a few people in the group who were going to vote for Biden. The rest of them were just like looking at RFK. You get the sense some of them would go home to Trump eventually because they really didn't like the Democrats. But they were pro-choice. And my thing about how abortion impacts elections has always had to do with whether or not abortion has high salience in that election. Because when it's not the thing, when you ask the voters at the top of any focus group, how do you think things are going in the country? Almost nobody ever brings up abortion. Like that's where people kind of bring up the things they're mad about. They're like, things are bad. And here's all the things I care about. It's usually economy, crime, inflation, immigration.
Boat size. A lot of people complain that they were only able to buy a 30-foot boat and not a 34-foot boat.
Sure.
And that has been an intolerable stain on their lives under Joe Biden.
Yeah. Point being that abortion doesn't come up organically, but when you introduce it, you get a really big response from people, and people they tell stories and they talk about how important this is to them. And that always has made me think that you have to prosecute this case. You cannot just sit back, just like think it's going, that people are going to come to this on your own. You have to prosecute the case actively and you have to keep it salient in people's minds. And I think that Arizona, it will not only have that salience impact now in Arizona, but that Arizona law can have salience in this entire election, right? Like this is what happens when you leave it to states. So not just for Arizona, but for other states.
So you think this is okay for Trump then? You think it works? He's like, leave it to the states?
No, I think it's bad for him.
You think it's okay?
What I'm saying is that this has given Democrats an opportunity to prosecute this case much more effectively in a forward-looking way than in a backward-looking way, which is, well, Trump nominated these Supreme Court justices. But now it's like, look what's happening in Arizona. That can happen in your state, too.
And Texas, right? The Texas bounty stuff and the counties making it criminal to drive through the county on the way to go out of state for an abortion. Like, this is, you know, like...
I wanted to let you cook, though, on Pro-Life Inc. It's pretty interesting. I noticed that Matt Schlapp over at CPAC was posting yesterday that American Conservative Union has always believed in giving it back to the states and that life begins at conception only in states where they decide that they want to ban abortion, not in other states.
Right. Right. Well, there's a quantum entanglement about life, right? Really? And so in red states, it's very important that it begins in conception, but that doesn't count in Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, they're fine with Massachusetts doing whatever they want. The extent to which I sat around with Pro-Life Inc. for a long, long time and watched any Republican deviating like a half tick from the line get thrown up against the wall and beat up. watch them drive basically pro-life Democrats out of the party. I mean, the Democratic voters did this too, but there were still a handful of pro-life Dems left. And, you know, like the Susan B. Anthony list would come out and campaign against them because they weren't like sufficiently pro-life. Ain't none of that going to happen now, right? This is something I would like to see them and their principles today with Donald Trump.
You know who does get to still just say the right thing, just say what he believes on abortion, though? Mike Pence, your friend Mike Pence.
Yeah, that's isn't right. That great? You saw Mike Pence did the right thing.
Well, at least he did the thing that was true to himself.
Yes,
we got a big storm happening here in New Orleans. Sorry about the background thunder there, but that thunder might be God's wrath on the non Mike Pence pro lifers, but. Shouldn't the Mike Pence story, JVL, be like a message to everybody about how wonderful it is when you free yourself from the shackles of Trump? And if Mike Pence hadn't freed himself, he wouldn't be able to do that. He'd be the one out here doing the, well, you know, two-step, the abortion two-step, the state's rights two-step. He doesn't have to do that anymore. Isn't that a...
It should be, but I think that it's the cautionary tale. Like, look at, geez, Mike's over there saying this stuff and nobody cares anymore even. We gotta make sure I don't become Mike Pence. That would be the worst thing in the world, right? This is
you
what
get complimented
I think
in the triad.
That, yeah, right. The worst thing that can happen to you. All right. Brief no labels stuff. Last week, no label. This was you guys did the secret show about this, right? Not TNL mm-hmm. about this.
We had a great secret show, man. The feedback on the secret show was great. Yeah, you might be getting the bit. Who knows? Who knows? We'll see.
Omitted was the fact that I mentioned this in the green room. Sarah, you didn't say when you and Tim were taping the secret, who was it who turned you on to Caitlin Clark a year and a half ago?
It was you. It was you. Yeah.
So Miss, like, I champion women's sports. I believe I'm the only person here who has coached women's sports and who was there with the Caitlin Clark. Did either of you guys watch the championship game on the ESPN feed? Where they put like Rebecca Lobo and somebody else. Like,
I just looked over to it for a little bit. Yeah.
That feed is genius.
Yeah, really good.
That's the best way to watch championship games. There should be a version of that for the men's game. Okay. No labels. I just wanted to say good on them. I apologize to No Labels. I take back all the mean things I said about them because at the end of the day, they did the right thing and I didn't think they would. And so their hearts were clearly in the right place the whole time. I was ascribing motives to them that I guess were incorrect. Good for them. I hope they go to Spago every day and enjoy the heck out of it.
You should send them a gift certificate. You should send Nancy Jacobson a Spago gift certificate.
Yes, you should.
I don't think Spago does gift cards.
You don't?
Yeah, I don't think that's...
They might.
They don't do coupons or gift cards at Spago. Okay. I don't believe.
I think magnanimous JVL is wonderful, JVL. However, their reason for dropping their bid was just because no one would do it.
Incorrect. Spago does have a gift card. $50.
Oh, we are going to send that to Mark Penn and Nancy Jacobson.
Maybe not Mark Penn.
Just Nancy. Nancy, go alone. Nancy can go alone.
$150 for her alone. Yeah. They're not saying...
There's nothing ruder than sending somebody a $50 gift certificate to a fancy restaurant.
Ding, ding, ding. Go have an appetizer. This is a real question, though. When they pulled the plug, did they say that it was because they didn't want to elect Donald Trump? Or did they say because the dastardly forces of a criminal conspiracy prevented us from being able to find somebody? And so I'm willing to just give them the benefit of the doubt and say that
I think they said the latter, actually.
Oh, did they?
I think so, but whatever.
No, I'm kidding. I'm grateful to them for... Look, they did the right thing.
Totally.
Whatever their motives, they did the right thing, and I'm grateful for it. And I'm going to send Nancy big 5-0 for her to blow at Spago. Okay. Ron Klain has a piece out. Now, I guess he doesn't have a piece. It's a piece reporting about Ron Klain in Politico, complaining that Joe Biden is talking too much about his effing bridges and trains. And I think this is fantastic. It's so perfect. Here's the audio. I think the president is out there too much talking about bridges. He does two or three events a week where he's cutting a ribbon on a bridge. And here's a bridge. All I could think of was Oprah. And you get a bridge. And you get a bridge. Back to Ron Klain. Like, I tell you, if you go into the grocery store, you go to the grocery store and, you know, eggs and milk are expensive. And the fact that there's a fucking bridge is not blah, 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 blah.
One of the blah, 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 blahs, which I just want to read. Like, it's a bridge. How interesting is the bridge? It's a little interesting, I guess, but not a lot interesting.
I wonder what you guys think about this. I think the bridges are important. I think they're good.
I got to say, I think it's a strange time to discount the importance of bridges. I just feel like for the timing in this particular moment, I'm not sure we've talked as much about the importance of a bridge or as we have in the last three. I like it because I think Ron Klain is correct on the merits of talking about the prices of things and whatnot. But I do think that the infrastructure stuff is important. And I think that we've been asking for Joe Biden to go cut ribbons.
Yeah, he's doing it.
I also feel like these are just not either or propositions. These are the kinds of things of like, here's a bridge and we're working on prices. Like, I don't know. Tell them you're doing a lot. But I don't know. Tim, what do you think?
Some of this, it's a leaked audio. You're talking extemporaneously. You know, he thinks he's among friends. You know, you're trying. So I'm sympathetic. I don't want to like mete out, you know, every sentence and every clause here of what he said. I think the broader point, which is a different quote than you read, which is he's not running for Congress. He's running for president. And you got into, as the George H.W. Bush saying, you got to have the vision thing. I think that's fair. And I think that Ron Klain, during the midterms, they needed to have Ron Klain. I was happy that Ron Klain was in there because there was a group that was around Biden, reportedly, that was like, he's got to focus on democracy. That's why he did the big democracy speech with the red light that the right figured out. Then Klain, again, reportedly, I'm not in the White House, but this is what people say. It was, you know, monomaniacal about we got to get gas prices down. We got to open up, you know, the strategic reserve. And as it turns out, it was like they needed to do both those things, right? Yeah, to your both right. and, right? And so it's nice to have somebody around in the inner circle that's saying, hey, okay, it's not enough to just do the rest on our record, rest on our laurels. And to me, the infrastructure thing has always been less about the most potent infrastructure message is less about, hey, you got this bridge, than like, hey, Joe Biden can do things and Donald Trump can't. Joe Biden cares about you and Donald Trump cares about himself. And that's why I'm always happiest when Joe Biden's cutting ribbons in red states and red districts, not because he's going to necessarily win these people over, because it's a message to the gettable people that's like, I care about you. I'm here. You know, I'm not one of those, you know, college campus kids that the Nikki Haley donor is worried about. You know, I'm not one of them. I'm Scranton Joe, right? And so to me, that kind of element of it is a stronger contrast than you know, you can get bogged down in the just listing out the accomplishments element. So
Tim, you said something that I would like to excavate a little bit. You said it's not enough for Biden to rest on his laurels, right? It's not enough to say, look at all these good things I just did. And that's true. That is a real thing that voters show time and time again, with one tiny exception.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump's entire campaign is his laurels, and his laurels consist only of the first 36 months of his presidency.
Also,
the final 12 months did not happen.
Also, people don't know about Joe Biden's laurels.
Who can do this?
Nobody knows about Joe Biden's laurels. Like,
they're living it right now, but they
don't know about it. They don't give him credit for it. And so I do think it's important for him to talk about.
I'm in favor. I'm just saying, why is it that voters are willing to be like, yeah, Trump's laurels are great, I'll vote for that? It's a fact.
This is the version of you and JVL's long-running optimism-pessimism debate. This is me and JVL's long-running debate. Donald Trump is being punished for that. If Donald Trump would stop talking about 2020 election fraud, and if Donald Trump would take Ron Klain's advice and go out into the industrial Midwest and have rallies every day where he's talking about how he's going to get prices down and how that damn car insurance is going up. It's 22%, the latest inflation thing. And his numbers would probably be better, I think. I do think that Donald Trump has been hard. Donald Trump lost in 2020. They lost in 2022. They lost in 2018. I think that Trump should also, well, he shouldn't because we want him to lose, but Donald Trump could also benefit from listening to Ron Klain. I don't think he's going to.
Not losing enough.
True.
Concur.
Final thing, Gaza. Tim, you wanted to do a quick Gaza darkness. Listen, if you're listening and you don't want to listen to Gaza darkness, I hear you. Fast forward 7 minutes because Sarah has a present for you that she's going to give us as a reward for the people who sit through this Gaza stuff.
And then I have a bonus second present that I'm going to give to people as
Okay.
So your newsletter yesterday on Gaza. Why don't you describe your newsletter, and then we can, and then I can explain my, why I'm eating darkness.
I haven't had a chance to get to it yet, so
it's like 4,000 words. I don't
know. Sarah looked at it and she was like, 4,000 words on Gaza. Pass. Okay, pass. All right. There's a Real Housewives. There's a lesbian Real Housewives episode on I can get to instead.
Literally a thing I've never watched. But please go.
I don't even know how to sum it up, Tim. So
I will sum it up for you. Read this it, way. Tim. Your point is that in any war, like the stability comes with equilibrium. Okay, stability comes with equilibrium. Your point was that the fundamental problem here is that Hamas. To Hamas, equilibrium is elimination of the Jewish state. That's equilibrium for Hamas. They will not get to equilibrium as long as the Jewish state exists. So that's a problem. Then your second point, which is the one that I disagree with, because I agree with you totally on Hamas being genocidal and awful and wanting Israel to not exist. Your second point was, so Israel's view of equilibrium is that Hamas is eliminated, and then there's a two-state solution where you bring in Arab countries like Saudi Arabia and you normalize relationships between them and Israel and you all fund a rebuilding of Gaza, right? That was your,
yes.
That's your take.
Yes.
To be clear,
I view that pathway as a pathway of decades, not a like thing that happens in 24 months.
Which takes me to where I'm at. So you view that as a pathway of decades. And so maybe that is the right answer. You eliminate Hamas and then you get over the course of decades to some kind of equilibrium. Here's my thing. I don't think that equilibrium is possible. I just don't think that it exists. Like, and I think that if you accept reality, like the theory of the case is if you listen to the people that are in charge of Israel, and if you listen to them, I don't think they really think that's the case either. And I think that there's some people in the Israeli government that think it's the case. But I think that to Israel, like equilibrium is like military occupation of Gaza. Now, semi-permanently. Who knows? So you say decades, maybe forever. And so maybe that's it. Okay. But I don't think that's very possible to have a very successful outcome either. And so to me, I look at what's happening in Gaza and I just think that like it's really darker than what you say. Like neither of those equilibriums are possible. The idea that Israel's going to eliminate Hamas, which doesn't seem like they're going to do anymore, or maybe they're going to change their plans. I don't know, but they're like removing the IDF now from Gaza. But that Israel is going to eliminate Hamas, kill tens of thousands more people, that Gaza is going to be complete. It's already 80% basically rubble, but Gaza is going to be completely rubble. And then the family and friends of the people that have been killed are going to come back to Gaza and start a new government that peacefully coexists with Israel in partnership with Saudi Arabia. I don't think that's going to happen. Like to me, that's a fanciful future that is not possible. And so I'm with whenever people are like, oh, Tim, you've gone lib. Like we need to eliminate Hamas. Great. Let's eliminate Hamas. But I just think as a practical matter, if you look at the choices, maybe the real equilibrium, which is horrible, by the way, because I just don't think that I'm in a dark place. I don't think there's any good options, is that Israel backs off, tries to reestablish some pretty frayed relationships with allies, gets aid in there, presents some kind of solution to Saudi Arabia and to its Western allies that this is a country that's going to try to, that they're going to do their best, blah, 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 and does deal with what you say in the newsletter is unacceptable with the fact that 200 whatever, like that right across the border from them, there are going to be people there that want to eliminate them and kill them. And that the Israel government is going to have to be more vigilant than they clearly were in the final years under Netanyahu when they were warned that this was going to happen and weren't prepared for it. I'm not saying this is a good solution. That I'm like, oh, yay, I'm happy that Israel is going to have genocidal terrorists like right next to them on their border. But to me, if the reality is that they're probably going to end up with terrorists that want them killed and eliminated on their border no matter what happens, then maybe once you work from that set of facts, then your strategic imperatives become different because you're just accepting the horrible reality that they're living in. So that's my dark place on what's happening there and why I've read several people's pitch for what happens when you eliminate Hamas. And I was like, if anybody's going to write a pitch that's going to resonate with me, it's going to be that commie JVL. And I read your pitch and it still felt kind of like fanciful. Like, I just don't think it's going to happen.
It's not going to happen now. It's not going to happen with the Netanyahu government. I think a two-state solution is the inevitable endpoint of this, right? I mean, Arafat walked away from this at Camp David in 2000, and maybe it doesn't happen in 2026, but maybe it doesn't happen in 2040. But at some point, there, like, you know,
does anybody want a two-state solution besides American Democrats and Europeans? Like, does anyone in the Middle East want a two-state solution still?
There was broad support for that in Israel 25 years ago, and there could be again.
Doesn't seem like there is now.
No, not right now. Certainly not among the political class. But that, again, just the logic of this, I think, leads there. Ultimately, there's just a lot of shit you got to wade through to get there. Sarah, I can tell that you are dying to tell what you think about all this. So please go ahead.
Please don't make me talk about this right now.
You don't have to. You had something nice for the people.
Okay, no, it's for you.
A reader requested my rebuttal to JVL, and I just want to say that the reader totally agreed with JVL, and he wanted to hear JVL own me, and it didn't seem like that happened. So I'm sorry that you might not be satisfied, but maybe in a different... Or do you feel like I was owned, JVL?
I think you and I basically agree. I'm sorry. I think you're saying, like, I can't see any of this happening in the near future. And I'm saying none of this is going to happen in the near future. But the logic of this stuff all sort of leads in the same way that you could say, like, India was always going to become independent of the British colonial system because it is impossible for a tiny island nation halfway across the world to rule a country with 400 million people, right? Now, India did not become independent for like 100 years. But all through that, you could see that the logic of it eventually is that India becomes a sovereign state.
Yeah.
Right? This is...
I hear you. I'm just not sure the logic of it exists. I guess my analogy was more towards Iraq, which was like, if you said at the beginning of the Iraq conflict, there is no chance that there will be a Germany in the Middle East and that we'll have the same success, then that would have informed the strategic imperatives quite a bit. Right. And so it would have informed the choices that you make. Right. And so if you're living in a world where, like, really, like, a peaceful Arab-Israel coexistence is not as extremely unlikely, then maybe that changes your strategy.
I will say this. One thing, a number of people said, you know, no, don't you understand? Whenever you kill a terrorist, like, you know, you only create five more. That is sometimes true. That is sometimes not true. When we eliminated ISIS, it was not the case that, like, it created five new terrorists for every ISIS. What created a bunch of new ISIS members was ISIS running around unchecked in Syria, right? ISIS succeeding created a whole bunch of new ISIS recruits.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And so it's, you know, like, sometimes if you kill all the terrorists, you do a good job at it, and you're competent at it, then you kill all the terrorists.
Yeah.
Anyway, all this is terrible, and there are no good things, and a lot of innocent people are dying, and everybody's unhappy.
And aid is getting in now, which is good. Aid is getting in now, which is good.
Sarah, tell us something funny.
Well, I'm going to turn the page on this conversation to a very different conversation.
Everybody okay? And actually, dessert.
As a palate cleanser, I'm just going to say that Trump was just asked about whether he thinks the Arizona Supreme Court went too far in their abortion ruling. And he says, yeah, they did. And that'll be straightened out. And as you know, it's all about states' rights. Clear as mud, sir.
Yeah.
When they say it's going to be straightened out, do you think Trump could go in there to the Freedom Caucus-y legislators in the state and be like, you're about to cost me Arizona, knock it off? No chance? You can't do it?
No.
Abortion is the one issue he can't do it on, I don't think. These guys are not gonna get cucked by Katie Hobbs.
But he's right. It will all be straightened out. See? Like, whatever. At some point there will be a decision, and whatever the decision is, it will be. And so it will all have been straightened out according to the rights of the state.
The future will take care of itself.
That's the genius of running for president when you have no interest in governing.
Yeah. Okay. So I just have a story to tell JVL, but I'll tell you both. It just happened last night. And I was at an event, and I happened to be at this event with one Pete Buttigieg. Now, I will tell you that I have a few things that I do sort of when I have to go to these like events with, you know, fancier people. Number one, they often have dress codes. I always wear jeans, no matter what the dress code is. I refuse. So I'm always just a little bit of already like an outlier.
The gloves? Do you wear the gloves too?
I don't wear the fingerless gloves. That was never a thing. Okay. It's a thing that you've made up since you were wearing fake glasses.
Do you pop the collar?
I wear the pop collar if I'm wearing something with a collar that pops. Good. But I can hang normally, right? Like I can hang. I'll be in my jeans. Nobody can touch me. There's a few people. There's like a handful of people that I feel that I get nervous around or that I'm like, I might fan girl.
You get nervous around Secretary Pete?
Well, so Liz Cheney's one of these people where I sort of lose the ability to speak cogently and act cool. But Pete, who I've always really liked, turns out to be another one, apparently. Because here's what happened. I had somebody, another person who I knew who was, I said, well, you got to introduce me to Pete. And so she does. She walks me up to Pete and she's like, you got to meet Sarah. Sarah's great. Here's some things about her. And I was like, be cool, be cool. And I was like, hey, how great to meet you. And he acts like he knows who I am. And I immediately am like, you don't know who I am. It's okay. It's cool. And I was like, hey, how are your kids doing? And he was like, they're great. And he says some things about his kids. And then he's like, do you have kids? Yeah, they're 5 and 7. And I said,
did you say, I thought you knew me, Pete.
No, I didn't. I said, they're 5 and 7. I was like, you know, I remember my oldest was born. And I remember holding him in the hospital during the American Carnage speech and just thinking to myself, you know, I'm not going to let him grow up in this world. Right. And I'm like, nailed that. And then he says, oh, your kid's birthdays are January 20th or your kid's birthday is January 20th. And I was like, no. And he was like, OK. And I was like, my kid's birthday is in June. And then I was like, nope, it's in July. And I was like, it's July 15th. Nope, it's July 20th. And for some reason, I can't remember my kid's birthday. And he just goes, oh, because the January 20th is when Trump gave the American Carnage speech. And so my kids were born on January 20th. And so our kids would have shared a birthday. And I was like, it was the RNC convention. It was the RNC convention is what I mean, right? Not the American Carnage speech. So already I'm like whiffing this hard, right?
It was the I alone can fix it speech.
So I'm stammering through this, can't remember my kid's birthday, and I can feel the sweat and the redness starting to creep up. And so I'm looking for something else to do. And I see a friend, a mutual friend of Tim and mine is in the corner. And for some reason, I do an aggressive point at the thing, and Pete kind of looks at what I'm pointing at and is just looking at me. And I'm like, I see a guy. I'm pointing, and I see a guy, and he's going, okay. So this thing's going off the rails, me and Pete talking.
Is there video of this anywhere?
No, so I'm sitting there being like, Longwell, pull it together. At which point I decide, forget it. Just going to have to fangirl because I've lost it all with the rest of it. And I'm like, you were the one I wanted in the primary. And he was like, oh, okay, that's very nice of you. I was like, because, you know, you have all the best words. And he was like, okay. And I don't know why I thought that, like, he would get the joke of you have all the best words.
That's a bulwark joke, not a real world joke.
And then someone else started to walk up towards him, and I just turned around and walked away because I'd lost. It was over. It was over. There was no more need. But yeah, you have all the best words. I just said the thing you say about him to
him.
That's
amazing. I love it. That's great. So I guess he's going to be super happy to be a guest on the Bulwark podcast.
I don't know. I can never see him again. So you can't tell him I'm here. I can never look at him again.
How much when you were in bed at night last night, like how much of this was just kind of rolling in your head?
It was really the part where I pointed aggressively and just said, there's a guy.
Okay. All right, Tim.
I had one more topic that I wanted to bring up. Did you mention to Pete anything about the Arizona duel law? Because I do have to share that about 40 minutes ago in this podcast, you might notice an awkward jump, and it's because Sarah and JBL both thought I was serious when I was saying that the Arizona law called for a duel, and at 10 paces between the abortion doctor and the local sheriff, that's not actually the case. So if any of you also thought that was not a joke, I was wondering why the joke wasn't landing with people. I was like, I think this is pretty funny. No, it's like dead serious from both of you. But maybe that's just a sign that I deadpanned too good.
Yeah. I mean, that's like saying, like, hey, there's this law about subsidizing mohair that says that if a farm has a gross product of under 500,000 tons of hair, then it qualifies for a subsidy. Like, but of course, it's only 200 tons. Like, that's... It's too close to real life to be recognizable as a joke. Well, okay. Right. Listen, Philly and D.C., May 1st in Philadelphia, May 15th in Washington, D.C. Go to thebulwark.com/events. Get a ticket. Come hang out with us. And Sarah will, while she's talking to you, point at some other rando and say, there's a guy. It'll be great.
Bye.